Hello and welcome back to Whence Came You, a Freemasonic podcast featuring discussions and research papers related to Freemasonry. I'm your host, Robert Johnson, a York Rite Mason and Knight Templar. Wow, what a week. I performed my first degree work as a senior deacon last Monday, and I was really nervous. Our air conditioning went out in the building, and everyone was feeling the heat. But all went off very well, and I'm sure that our new brother enjoyed it. It is my pleasure to announce that the Whence Came You Android and iPod app will be live in about 2 weeks. If you choose to get it, you can stream the episodes instead of downloading them. You'll be able to connect to the show via email, Twitter, Facebook, and the website right from the device. And because of my obligation, I have to meet with you on the level. The app has to be made, and such, I had to pay for it. So the app will be a one-time charge or purchase charge of $2. It wasn't my first choice. I wanted it to be free, but due to the cost of creating it, this is what we have. I had a choice on the price, and I chose the cheapest option, which was the $2 option, $1.99, of which the iTunes or the Android app, whichever you download it from, they take 30% off the top, and then there's a 50-50 split. And that split is between the folks who made the app for me and then also the show. So of the $2, 30 cents goes to either Android or iPod, or iTunes rather, and 70 cents goes to the folks who made the app, and 70 cents goes into the show's account, which we'll just turn around and put right back into the show to bring you high quality things. Now, the bonus is, if you purchase the app, there will be bonus features for each episode only available to the app subscribers, such as artwork and the original PDF documents of which the research papers are written. So be on the lookout for that very soon. Well, the other day, I got an email from a brother in Japan. And if you're listening, Brother Manuel, thanks again for your kind words. Brother Manuel is stationed in Japan, and so let's keep him and all the other brothers and service personnel in our thoughts and prayers. Brother Manuel was raised to the sublime degree of a Master Mason in California. And in Japan, he's affiliated with the Prince Hall Lodge, and he's a Masonic Education Officer, a position that was created, and rightly so. I think we need to have something like this in many lodges, maybe even every lodge. How much could we benefit from an Education Officer in the lodge? Someone to help and guide, and have answers when we need them. My lodge, a lot of the brothers get together on Sunday mornings, the mentors, people who guide you through your catechisms. Been very helpful. So again, Brother Manuel, thank you very much for your email, and it was very, very nice to hear from you. Now, last week we talked about Cryptic Council and its degree system. As usual, if you've missed it, check it out. It has some really good information provided by the York Rite website, which is www.yorkrite.org. So this week we'll be talking about the Commandery, also known as the Knights Templar or Order of the Temple. In my experience, there were 4 degrees that blew my mind. The 3rd degree, the Royal Arch degree, and the Select Master degree were in the list. But when it comes to intensity, nothing is more intense than a degree which confers the Order of the Temple. So as usual, here is information on the degree of Knights Templar. The following information is provided by the Grand Encampment of Knights Templar, United States of America, and their website, www.knightstemplar.org. The chivalric orders are a set of 3 orders culminating in the grade of Knight Templar and controlled by the same. The body is markedly different from its foreign counterparts in that it exhibits a paramilitary structure and outlook on Masonry, being the only branch of Masonry in the world that is a uniformed body. Its requirements that its members be professed Christians has led to calls of condemnation from other Masonic bodies, and organizations both inside and outside the United States claiming that the body is more of a Christian organization rather than a Masonic body. These have had little effect on the body, however, as many of the organizations criticizing the body have similar degree among themselves. The American body is also arranged different from its nearest relatives in England. The American body includes the illustrious Order of the Red Cross, which is not conferred in any other organization, though it has a very close cousin in the Irish and American Order of Knights Masons, and in the English Allied Masonic degree grade of the Red Cross of Babylon. Also, in the United States, the Order of Malta is conferred on members before being eligible to receive the Order of the Temple, whereas in England, the Order of Malta is an honorary grade bestowed on Knights Templar. In the United States, all businesses transacted in the Order of the Temple, the other bodies only being opened for the conferral of the orders. In England, the Order of Malta meets and operates as a separate body in addition to the Order of the Temple. The Illustrious Order of the Red Cross, an order emphasizing the lesson of truth. Elements of this order were practiced in ancient lodges before the final form of the Master Mason degree came into use. It is still practiced in the full ceremonial form by the Knight Masons of Ireland and the Knight Masons of the United States, and as the Red Cross of Babylon, an English order of the Allied Masonic degrees. The Order of Malta, an order emphasizing the lesson of faith. This order requires the Mason to profess and practice the Christian faith. The Pass degree of the Mediterranean Pass, or Knights of the St. Paul, prepare the candidate for the order by introducing the lesson and example of the unfearing and faithful martyr of Christianity. The order is centered on an allegorical elements of the Knights of Malta, inheritors of the medieval Knights Hospitaller. And finally, the Order of the Temple, an order emphasizing the lessons of self-sacrifice and reverence. It is meant to rekindle the spirit of the medieval Knights Templars' devotion and self-sacrifice to Christianity. The history of the Masonic Order is long and convoluted, with the Order's ritual differing between that conferred in England and in the United States. The practice in the United States has a slightly militant zeal to the lessons of Christianity, whereas the English ritual is more allegorical. However, the American ritual is the most impressive, and the more emphasis is also there in placing on the solemnity and reverence associated with the crucifixion, resurrection, and ascension of the Christ. The presiding body is a commandery, and the presiding officer is a commander, titled the Eminent Commander. This week's famous Freemason is Ty Cobb. A lot of people said he was kind of blacklisted as a Freemason, since he was known to have somewhat of a questionable reputation. But without further ado, Ty Cobb. Some have noted that while Ty Cobb is recognized as one of the greatest American baseball players ever, his career is sometimes mentioned by sports purists for its unsportsmanlike conduct. A story often repeated is that Ty would sit in the dugout, filing his cleats and pointing with them at opposing players in order to intimidate and gain an advantage. Like so very many of his contemporaries, he repeatedly has racist tendencies as well. Despite this, he was the very first player elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame. So, it is difficult for a conclusion to be drawn regarding claims of bad sportsmanship. Playing at a time when there were few rules and strong racial divides, his behavior may seem inappropriate only in retrospect, particularly when he was so well received by those of his own time. When one compares Cobb's behavior with that of players who spit on umpires or who have made a career out of trash-talking, it seems difficult to believe such a thing would become part of his history. For the record, we included Cobb on this page, but it appears that those who write to remind us of his reputation really have not considered that there was apparently a very hateful press at the time, and there seems to be incontrovertible proof that they exaggerated and even lied about Cobb's actions. Though his bad acts were highly popularized in many cases, they might be more myth than reality. There was a Scottish Rite class named in his honor in 1955, and he received an honorary life membership in a Masonic lodge in the midst of his playing career in 1921. Brother Cobb, whose father was also a Mason, joined the fraternity in 1907 at the age of 21. Once more, I've failed to find the home lodge of Ty Cobb. If you know, please comment on the Facebook page or on our website, let us know. So I was reading a Western novel, and it got me wondering about Freemasons of the Wild West. Kind of an interesting idea. And I couldn't find anything. However, I did find a small blurb, which I thought was a good piece. So I'd like to read that with you. It was entitled, Old West Masonry. It was a tale of Masonic men surrounding a campfire in the Old West at night, discussing the fraternity and its teachings. One old man listened patiently, and finally spoke up. I can tell you more about Masonry in a little example than some great Masonic philosophers can in books. Everybody stand up and gather in a circle around the campfire. They did that. Now everybody, hold your hands to the next man next to you. And they did that too. Now what do you see looking ahead? The face of a brother Mason through the flames. What do you feel in front of you? The warmth of the fire and the comfort it brings on a cool night. What do you feel at your side? The warm hand of a brother. Okay now, drop your hands and turn around. They did so. Now what do you see looking ahead? Complete darkness. What do you feel looking ahead? A sense of loneliness, of being alienated. What do you feel at your side? Nothing at all. What do you feel on your backside? The warmth of the fire. So it is with Masonry, said the old man. In Masonic gatherings, you can feel the warmth of the Masonic interaction. You can see the face of a brother through the light and Masonry that it brings to you, and you can always feel the warm hand of a brother. When you turn away from Masonry and are out in the world, you see darkness, feel alienated and alone, and do not feel the warm hand of your Masonic brother, but Masonry and the warmth and light that it brings are just a turn away from you. Author unknown. So on to the Masonic paper this week, and this week's paper is a two-parter. To keep the podcast from being too long, we'll split it up into 2 weeks. I like to keep the podcast to be under 30 minutes, preferably. It makes for something to listen to on your commute. So anyway, our paper this week is entitled The Altar of Freemasonry. So without further ado, The Altar of Freemasonry, Part 1. The Altar of Freemasonry by William Harvey, J.P., Provincial Grand Master of Forfarshire, 1934 to 1936. Preface. I have had many expressions of thanks from brethren throughout the country for my lectures on the second and third degrees, and numerous suggestions have been made to me to prepare a lecture that might be introduced as part of the working of the first degree. This I have now ventured to do. In many ways, the first degree is not excelled by any of the latter ones. It is the foundation of our system, the basis upon which our whole structure is reared. I hope the following pages will be found helpful to brethren in the way of explaining the scope of the degree and illustrating the symbols presented in the tracing board. William Harvey, 4 Gowrie Street, Dundee. The Altar of Freemasonry. The enthusiastic Freemason who is genuinely interested in the system of morality which the order exists to inculcate climbs rung after rung of the ladder which leads to knowledge in our mystic circle. Doubtless, the brother who reaches the summit forgets much that he has learned in the course of his toilsome ascent, but one thing he is ever likely to remember is the altar at which he knelt as an initiate, and upon which, when darkness had been removed from his wandering eyes, he beheld the three great lights of our ancient and honorable fraternity. The altar is the rallying point of Masonic thought. It is the point with the Masonic circle at which all distinctions among men are swept away, and to which every member may stand related in a common endeavor to achieve a splendid equality of virtue, morality, and brotherly love. Rising from this sacred spot, at which, by his belief in God and his honor as a man, he has pledged himself to secrecy, fidelity, and obedience, the young Mason is privileged to view the lodge as an emblem of the universe, and to note the symbols of the faith of which, of his own free will and accord, he has become a devotee, and the altar itself may first claim his attention. From earliest days, the altar has been invested with strangely sacred associations, and in most religions has been regarded as an indispensable requisite of every place of worship. In primitive times, it was believed to be the temporary abode of the deity, and if the idea is well-founded that the lodge is a symbol of the universe, it is fitting that the altar should occupy a central position, since the Supreme Being, whose favor we solicit and whose love we acknowledge, is the center and source of all creation. The original purpose of an altar was to provide a place where sacrifices could be made. After the erection of the tabernacle, there was added the altar of incense, which is described as square in section, 1 cubit each way, and 2 cubits in height, with projecting horns, and authorities insist that that is the proper form of a Masonic altar. In the Jewish ritual, the altar had a threefold significance. It was the place where sacrifices were made, where incense was offered, and its horns, certain classes of offenders found sanctuary. In modern Freemasonry, the whole may be moralized as a spot at which the fervent craftsman offers the incense of brotherly love, relief, and truth, on which he lays unruly passions and worldly appetites as a fitting sacrifice to the genius of the order, and under the shadow of which he finds sanctuary from greed and avarice and other lusts that would devour him. The altar is an appropriate resting place for the three great lights of Masonry. The initiate is told that the Bible is a gift from God to man to rule and govern his faith. A craftsman explains in lecture and says the following. The Bible, he says, is said to derive from God to man in general, because the Almighty has been pleased to reveal more of his divine will by that holy book than by any other means, the compasses being the chief implement used in the construction of all architectural plans and design are assigned to the Grand Master in particular, and the emblems of his dignity, he being the chief head ruler of the craft. The square is given to the whole Masonic body because we are all obligated within it, and are consequently bound to act thereon. As we rise from the altar to take place in the universe symbolized in a lodge, as worthy Masons should carry those three lights with us, letting them be lamps unto our feet in all our latter days, treasuring in our hearts the volume of the sacred law as the unerring standard of truth, the square as the monitor of mercy, and the compasses as the symbol of that circle of temperance in all things by which we should constantly surround ourselves. Passing from the altar and the lights, the initiate may next observe the form of the lodge, of which he is now a unit. It is what is popularly and somewhat inaccurately described as an oblong square, and is situated due east and west. According to tradition, the form of the lodge ought to be a double cube expressive of the united powers of darkness and light in the creation, and because of the Ark of the Covenant and the Altar of Incense were both of that figure. Dr. Albert G. McKay, in his Lexicon of Freemasonry, puts forward the theory that the oblong form has a symbolic allusion to the ancient world. If, he says, we draw lines which shall circumscribe just that portion of the world which was known and inhabited at the time of the building of Solomon's Temple, these lines running a short distance north and south of the Mediterranean Sea and extending from Spain to Asia Minor will form an oblong square whose greatest length will be from east to west and whose greatest breadth will be from north to south. This oblong square, he adds, which thus enclosed the whole inhabited part of the globe, would represent the form of the lodge to denote the universality of Masonry, since the world constitutes a lodge, a doctrine that has since been taught in that expressing sentence, in every clime the Mason may find a home, and in every land a brother. Brethren with a larger imagination take even a broader view than McKay, telling us that the lodge represents the whole universe, being in length from east to west, and in breadth from north to south, and in height even to heaven itself. And it is just because of this that the roof is frequently decorated to represent the starry firmament, an emblem of those immortal mansions to which faithful Masons hope to last ascend, there to behold the Grand Master of the universe who reigns forever. To reach the celestial city, the initiate is taught that he must climb a ladder which rests upon the volume of sacred law, and which the whole principal rungs are faith, hope, and charity, faith in God, hope in immortality, and charity toward all men. The ladder, frequently called Jacob's ladder, because it suggests that which appeared to Jacob in his vision of Bethel, is one of the prominent emblems of the tracing board to which the initiate's attention may next be directed. There is a tradition that in early days the speculative Mason, anxious to illustrate his teaching, followed the fashion of his operative brother, and chalked the desired design on the floor of the lodge, just as today, in rural places, we may find a stonemason who draws upon the ground the arch for which he is dressing stones. It is probably on account of this ancient custom that one prominent feature in the immovable tracing board of today is what is called the mosaic pavement, which represents the floor or carpet of the lodge. And that's the end of the first half of that paper, and when you come back next week, we'll finish it up. That's going to do it for this week, and I'd like to thank everybody for listening. Thanks for leaving the comments. Again, find us on Facebook, which you can find via our website. Leave comments on the website. The Twitter page will be up soon. The app is coming within 2 weeks. It'll be on iPhone. It'll be on Android. It'll be $2. You'll be supporting the show and paying the people making the app. There's going to be bonus features for you if you buy the app. There'll be exclusive content for each episode. Hopefully, I'll be able to put up the PDF documents for download for the research papers and any other artwork which may be relevant to what we're talking about. So again, thanks very much for listening. And for Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. We'll talk to you next week.